All right, we got two great guests this week on the podcast. Before I get to them, I am going to be doing on a regular basis now a rant at the beginning of my podcast because if I don't, I'm probably going to snap and shoot somebody. So I think this will be a way to just stay out of jail and not have my son grow up to be basically fatherless. So this week, I bought a new cell phone at the AT&T store, and I got my arm twisted to buy a case for the phone. Now, we've all bought a case for the phone. You want another $35 for the case. My wife is with me. She's like, just buy the case or don't buy the case. But I start getting into an argument with the salesman because I said, you know, why do I need the case? And, you know, he's like, well, something could happen to the case. It could hit it. You could hit it, drop it, break it, whack it. And I'm like thinking, well, I said to him out loud, isn't the phone the case? Like the hard plastic shell with all the stuff inside that the, you know, poor Korean boy put together for a bowl of rice so Steve Jobs could be viewed as a hero to the world. Isn't that the case? Like, why do you need a case for the case? And my wife's like, just buy the case or don't buy the case. And I'm like, no, I'm making a point. Why do I need a case for the case? It's a scam. It's just a way to get more money out of us. You don't do that with anything else in life. You don't have a baby and the doctor goes, look, I know it's got skin, but you might want to laminate it. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Another $69.95, easy cleanup. So, long story short, I'm getting a lot of dirty looks from the people behind me because I'm holding them up, making my point. But at the end of it, I bought a case. So the moral of the story is, don't buy a case and don't be a pussy like me. I ended up being a pussy. All right, there, I bought the case. What can I tell you? My guests this week are Bianca Kailik and Ellie Noss, two really, really cool actresses. I interviewed them in Hollywood. They have appeared on some of the biggest shows going right now, Undateable, CBS's Rules of Engagement, ABC's Happy Endings. They've been in the hit feature films Maid of Honor and The Rocker. They also host a really cool, interesting, funny podcast called Atomic Moms, where they talk about being moms and married and all cool stuff. I love this interview because it goes in a lot of different directions that I didn't expect. We talk about being married, working in television, not mentally beating yourself up, Ellie's breasts, cutting, gets a little serious, squirt camp, you got to listen to understand what that is, use your imagination, and we talk about making out in cars, the best thing ever in America. A really cool conversation with two really cool, beautiful women, and I want you to check out my website, paulmecurio.com. As I mentioned, I've got a new CD out called It's Not Me, It's the World. I mentioned in the past, pick one up. But the most important thing is spread this link around. Send it to your friends, to your mom, your dad. It's an interview that everybody can listen to. We want to keep building the podcast. Tell your friends to subscribe. It's free on iTunes. You guys are the best. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter, Paul Mercurio.
See, that's why we're so good together, because we're opposites, because everyone thought I was the angel and I was not. Everyone figured that out by college, but.
Oh, really?
So that sexy voice is Bianca Kailik.
Yes.
And I'm Ellie Noss.
Ellie Noss. And these are the Atomic Moms and also very accomplished actresses in their own right and wonderful mothers and wives of two very talented husbands. Bianca is married to Mike Catherwood, who is the host of Loveline. Super nice guy. Always really nice to me when I go on. We talked about you a little bit off the air.
I can't wait to hear what.
And Ellie is married to Adam Stekiel, and he is the creator of Undateable. And you're only married to him to get work in the business.
Which was so stupid. No one told me, don't marry the writer.
No, you described yourself as the Lucille Ball to him, right?
I'm his Lucille. I'm always trying to sneak on his shit. And I'll go audition. I'll be like, I'm Lucy. Like, I'll tap in. I'll do anything you want. One time I auditioned for something. Actually, I auditioned for Undateable for the pilot. I was supposed to – I auditioned for the pregnant – okay. The character was – her one line was, I'm not pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was pregnant, but I wasn't showing. So then I padded myself heavily
up top
so that I could be heavy enough, and down below so I could be heavy enough to be like, I'm not pregnant. So I got it. Then they had to reshoot the scene 7 months later when I – when I was very, very pregnant.
Oh.
And so then they recast me.
Oh, my God.
So I did the finale. But I was mad about that, too. I was like, I am, you
know. But you got a better part.
Yeah.
I did.
You got a much better
part. But your daughter ruined your career, is what you're saying.
For a moment.
Yeah. No, forever. That would have been the difference between. Ellie has been seen on Undateable, Happy Endings, on the feature films Maid of Honor, and Bianca is a regular on Undateable and has done a plethora of other things, including with my buddy Tom Hertz, the creator of Rules of Engagement from New York City. He was before my time, but I was just starting out, and he was like an established act, a very dry-witted comedian.
Yes, he is, that Tom Hertz.
And he's like the guy that like kind of – he's the guy in high school that like is real quiet, and then all of a sudden you got a wet foot because he's been pouring beer while in your shoe while he's talking to you. Like, that's that guy. And you guys came together through Undateable, right?
I was after we had already filmed the first season, and I was I had given birth, and Sabrina was how old? Like 8 months at that point?
I don't do math. But we
went to brunch,
and we were buddies already. Like, you would come over and play with Sabrina, and for my baby shower, she got the whole cast together to like give us our crib.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to brunch to meet Magnolia for the first time. And we
which is Bianca's daughter.
Mm-hmm. And we were super psyched about being new moms, and we couldn't shut up, and we were like, let's do a podcast.
Working actresses, were you like, was the motherhood thing like, did it hit you all of a sudden like, I want to do this now, or like, oh, I'm not sure, because it just makes life a lot more complicated as a working mother? Like, where were you guys on
that? Well, I kept waiting. I kept thinking there was a point that I needed to get to in my career before I could consider.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were waiting for me to come along, but all right, okay.
Yes, actually. I was very excited about doing this podcast today.
Okay, that was a little sarcastic, but I'll take it as genuine.
I can do sarcasm with sex all the time.
You're all covered up. You're not doing anything.
I know.
All right, it's boring.
Meanwhile, my little boys are out.
I'm calling them that from now on. It's the best name ever.
How are your boys?
Your boys
look good.
I've never heard that before.
Well, it's like when women wear something revealing, and then you look at you like, why are you looking? It's like, well, why the fuck did you wear that?
Yeah, exactly.
You wanted me to look. No, I'm not saying you did.
I have like a B cup. I mean, maybe like A+.
My wife was always flat, and then she got pregnant, and then they got big, and then I couldn't touch them because they were for – and I it was like a strip club in your house, and your wife's the dancer and the bouncer in one, and they're not for you because they're all for the little shit machine.
Yeah.
And I was like – and then they went back.
And then they disappear.
Yeah.
And they go away.
That's what I'm in mourning.
I know. I'm about to go there, so I keep telling Mike, you can't touch them, but just enjoy how they look.
Yeah. Okay, well, Mike said, actually, if you don't mind my saying, like, for 4 months after you had your child, like, it was rough, and you were, was it postpartum, or what was it?
No, it was postpartum for him. I don't know if that's what he was referring to. He did. He actually went into a pretty deep depression after Magnolia was born. But it's weird. We've talked about this on our podcast. Like, after you squeeze a child through your vagina, it doesn't seem like such a great place to have a penis in anymore, oddly enough.
Really? Why? You just didn't have the craving for sex?
It's weird. The first time we had sex, it felt different. It didn't feel like it used
to. He's that small? Wow, Mike, I'm sorry this is coming out on my podcast.
Can I tell you a funny story about Mike and his quote-unquote small penis? When we first started dating, I would listen to Loveline all the time. And I don't know if you've heard him on there, but he talks about his small penis all the time.
Oh, he did. He mentioned it like 8 times.
Yeah, it makes me really angry.
Because when we were talking.
Okay.
Well, let me tell you. No, I'm just kidding.
That would be weird.
It was in my anus, and it was like there was nothing there.
It was like a cute.
Because after you push out stuff out of there, like that's.
You're like, I had bigger shit than you.
Hello, is this happening yet? Come on, I'm in already. Mike, you are? No, you know why it came up? Because he's obsessed with these Italian porn actors that yell and scream during sex.
Oh,
and we was talking about that on the episode that I was on with him. He's like, you have to go, like he's like, but within that context, about 8 times he referred to his penis as very small. Now, he's a very handsome man and muscular, so I have trouble. Handsome.
This is the thing. So we were going
overlook anything.
Right? I tried to. I started having nightmares about it when we were first dating because I was like, I really like this guy. And if he has a really small penis, this could be a deal breaker.
Because you have a big vagina.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's what I read.
Wizard sleeve.
Wow. I never heard that term. Wait. I got to write these down. Lizard sleeve. And what was it? Flat as a board.
Flat as a board. Easy to nail.
Easy to nail. mail. All right, okay. There I got these down. All right, so anyway, so you were really worried.
I was really worried to the point that I was actually having dreams that it was, like, you know, inverted. And and then it wasn't. And it's not even small. It's totally perfectly average and great. And listen.
It's totally perfectly average.
That's going to stick with me.
But, you know, yeah. It did the job. Because Magnolia
it's
is
perfect.
Here.
Yeah.
I have no complaints.
My husband is
enormous. But it pisses me off when he says that because I'm like, I don't want people to think I'm with someone who has a small penis.
No, he's...
Keep that to yourself, buddy.
So
we can't keep the boys to ourselves, but we can pad them. You know, like our inadequacies right out there.
So how did you come around to, like, liking sex again?
It just took a little bit of time, I think. I tried, like, you know, you're supposed to wait 6 weeks after.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my wife had a C-section, so...
Oh, well, then wait even longer, because that would be more painful.
Oh, maybe that was the problem.
Yeah.
I just was right in there.
I have girlfriends that had C-sections, and they...
And by the way...
very painful.
Yeah.
Because it's still a hormonal thing.
Exactly. You get
menopausal
that's true.
Vagina.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Say it again?
It's like sandpaper. You get menopausal vagina.
Wow. What this is uncomfortable.
I just like the way your face looks when you say
what is menopausal up. Vagina? What is
I like making men uncomfortable.
What is what is menopausal? So I'm going to just look at your boys to relax. Okay, there you go. By the way, I tried not to look after the C-section, so I went over. You know, they put the baby and they clean it, put it under the hot lamp, and I turn back, and out of the corner of my eye, I see some of her intestines still on her stomach.
Shut
And my son, she wouldn't breach, so they put her on Pitocin for like 20 hours. And her father's an OBGYN, but he wasn't doing the procedure. We were in New York where we were living. We grew up in Rhode Island. So she's calling her father, like, he goes, the OBGYN was such an asshole because he wanted – literally had a dinner at the country club and he just wanted to get in there and do a C-section and go. And he got pissed at us that we wouldn't say yes to the C-section. So then eventually it's got to do this – the father's – you got to do the C-section. And she's under the knife and you hear, oh, this is the problem. The cord's wrapped around his neck.
Oh, my God.
No.
Twice. And then we're both standing there. She's lying there. I'm standing there. And there's the longest, most pregnant pause of like a minute. And he's not saying if the baby's alive or not. You're not hearing anything. And then you hear, we got it. We got it. And boom. And he cut in the thing. And then I saw her insides on her outside.
Did you see them stuff it back in? Because they literally just stuff it back in. There's no like, oh, this should be here or this should go there. It's just like,
boom, boom, boom.
What is this doctor's address?
I was so pissed at him afterwards. I pulled him aside and I said, you know, if we have another kid, you're the last person that we'd ever come to. Why? Well, because the fact you're asking me why, you weren't even aware of, like, you know, my wife was, at that point, I think the doctor and the woman, it's almost like a daughter father relationship. He's the authority figure. Yeah. He's older. He kind of looked like her dad, and so she felt like she was doing something wrong. It made her cry when we were trying to decide. You know, like, and you know,
and his pressure. His pressuring her, and
well, that was the thing that freaked
that
us out.
Causes her, makes it even more. Like, of course, you're gonna have a C-section if you're feeling that much pressure from your doctor.
Yeah.
Like, nothing's gonna work
when
you're under the gun like that.
It was not a happy.
I had a really bitchy doula. So you like hire this hippie to like keep everyone in check so they can't say stuff like that to you.
Did you think about having the baby underwater? There's some people that do that.
I had a pool at my house ready to go. But that didn't happen because Mike turned off the heater.
He wanted to save a few dollars.
You know how much it costs to heat this thing?
That's why you didn't do it in the hospital, because you didn't want to pay.
I could buy condoms for my small penis with this money.
Well, it's special order, Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
Poor Mike.
Do you so?
Well, I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah, no, but it all worked out, and so. Is it in terms of your workload and in terms of just being mothers and sort of tying into Atomic Moms and what you talk about, like, how was it for each of you on the other side of it now? Is it what you expected, more of what you expected, less of what you expected?
Parenting?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. It's so, I mean, everyone says it's hard, and you just don't know that level of hard. Yeah. Like, nobody can prepare you for that. And also, I think nobody can prepare you for how hard it is to just go out and live your life again after having a kid. Because, right. like, I loved traveling, and I love to go places by myself. I would always take at least 1 week a year where I would go somewhere and be just by myself.
Nice.
And there was this complete cutoff when I would do that. And I can't do that anymore because part of me is always rooted in this place wherever she is.
Yes.
So if for somebody who is used to being very independent, that feeling, it's very heavy. So I've had a little bit of difficulty with that.
I think I would always search out ways to feel guilty. And now that I have a child, I never have to do that anymore.
Feel guilty about
anything, like that I'm screwing up somehow, or I should be doing this, well, and this I'm doing that. And now that I have a child, I can always feel that way. Because whenever I walk out the door, she starts crying. I feel guilty. It feels great.
So basically, you had a child to get new guilt.
Yeah. Well, now I just don't have to search for it anymore. So it's
wow,
it's
you
freeing.
Are psycho. And somebody married you? No.
Well, I was 23 when we got engaged at 3 months of
wow.
each other. So he walked right into
Are
it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. I was a senior. She was a junior in high school. And we
oh
were
God.
Together like 15 years before we got
oh, wow.
finally got married. Well, I'm a hot piece of ass. She didn't want to let me go. Well, you'd go out with me, right? I mean, I'm kind of cute, right?
I would. Yeah? I totally would.
Yeah. Yeah, you have nice lips.
Thank you. So do you.
Yeah, I used to get picked on as a kid about my lips.
Really?
Because they were big. Like, my lips were
beautiful.
I was 8, but they were the same size then as they are now. So, like,
that
in
happens.
Proportion. And they'd call me, like, fish lips and all this stuff. And then I'd get in fist fights over them. And now people go, women are going to be like, you have collagen in your lips? I'm like, no, I hate my lips. Like, you know, the thing that was, like, whatever. But so that I don't know why, but I look at lips. I don't know. Whatever. I'm a freak. But but you said you have a quote from your there's a quote from your blog, Ellie, that
on
I thought
having to post or
meet the tribunal of a-holes in my head. Their critical, unoriginal, and relentless commentary disconnects me from all that is good. It's like listening to a panel of Fox News commentators. By the way, I go on Fox News, and you're exactly right. And Real Housewives. And then I can show them something great, and they can tell me everything that's wrong with it or how it can be improved. I needed to fire them. And that's exactly why my wife thinks that you and I are exactly alike.
I love that. You know what makes me so happy about hearing this?
Oh, yeah.
Is I wrote that Huffington Post blog when I was up in Michigan at my grandparents' cottage. And I got that idea for the Tribunal of Assholes. Mm. My mom's a lawyer, so it was like, oh, this is like perfect. Tribunal of Assholes. Like, they'll get this. Mm. They'll understand what this is. And I went down and I told my grandmother, I was like, you know, the Tribunal of Assholes in your head. It's like, you know, the parents that talk about it's Tribunal of Assholes. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about? And she gave me this. I was like, this is why I have a Tribunal of Assholes. Because, like, you're not, like, aren't you excited?
Well, that generation, they're not up their ass the way we are.
No, I don't think they are.
No, I think it's just like get up. Maybe they just bury their sort of dysfunction in there.
Oh,
but they're like, you just get up, you go to work, you come home,
yes.
you have sex every once in a while, you raise your kids, and then you retire and die.
Well, also, it's like it's just where you are. Like I've had this discussion with my mom. Like, you know, my mom's my dad passed away 4 years ago, and my brother had a horrendous accident. And so there's all this stuff that she hasn't really dealt with. And so I always say, like, what do you think about maybe going to therapy? And she's like, I'm not having an existential crisis like you have.
Exactly.
But I'm like, but it's not just for people who are in the, you know, spirals of depression or whatever. Right. It's like, I feel like I go because I want to know more about myself. But that generation doesn't have that.
Exactly.
They don't want to do
exactly.
that, which I respect, and that's fine. But when it's like, well, what do you have anxiety about?
Well,
I'm like, well, wait, you don't have anxiety? Like, you're holding a glass of whiskey. Like, what do you mean you
have anxiety? Exactly. It's your way of coping.
Like, okay, great.
Exactly. Everything's fine. Why are we out of bottles of whiskey? This is why I can't live in this house, goddammit.
So I wrote that right after I went on this 7-day silent meditation retreat.
And you're how old at this point?
In my mid to late 20s.
Okay, so you're married.
I'm
years
married.
Ago.
No
and
child
I,
yet.
It was like a couple of years ago. Yeah, a few years ago. And no child yet. And my mom freaked out. She was so upset about me going on this silent meditation retreat.
You're like Reese Witherspoon in that movie that just came
out. Wild, except I hate camping.
Exactly. Yeah, you seem a little high maintenance. I'm going to find myself, but
mentally.
It has to be at a Four Seasons or a Ritz-Carlton, or I don't go.
Exactly.
How can I be expected to find myself without some Veuve Clicquot in my room? Hello. Yeah, are we animals?
My bohemian is anthropology. Like, but my mother freaked out. She was so upset. She thought I was going to shave my head. She thought it was a cult. She kept asking about my marriage because it was like Eat, Pray, Love. Not that she's read that or Wild, but that you know, you're going to go do this thing. Clearly, you're running away from your marriage. There's got to be something really wrong if you want to settle down.
And how did your husband Adam feel about it? Was he concerned?
He was so excited. He thought it was the funniest thing ever. So imagine me going to a silent meditation retreat. I mean, he's a comedy writer. He was like, oh, this will be good.
Is your husband – like my wife has sort of got it together somehow and she's calm and I'm like this all over – like there's a lot of stuff with me and this stuff. And the phrase fire them – I work with a coach sometimes and her name is Lauren Zander. And she's been on my podcast, and you should listen to the episode. And it's Handel Group is the name of her company. And she works with individuals and executives and stuff. And so my big thing is with her is like I live in the negative, right? I was a lawyer by training, so I'm risk averse, right? So I tend to plan and blah 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 blah. So I always plan for like 8 conversations. I plan for like if Ellie says this. If it doesn't go the way I want it to, she might say this, then I'll say that. And then she's just – and
this
right.
is the way I live.
Okay, but see
my
now –
my parents are lawyers.
Okay.
So this is the problem.
Okay, so Lauren Zander would say to you, just be manifest, which is Neville, the philosopher. I don't know if you read him, but like it's all about see – okay, so you want the sitcom without sleeping with this guy. You want a sitcom. See yourself in the show, right? See yourself going to set and all that stuff. So anyway
– so I slept with the wrong guy.
So all of this stuff that you do is the stuff that she yells at me about. And I'm good some days and other days I'm not, you know. And I tend – but I also think we live in a society where it's too easy to blame everybody else for your failings. So maybe that's it. Why are you the way you are with this? Is it your parents really hard on you?
I would say that – yeah. Well, yes.
You want to go back to talking about your boys and lighting this up?
I love my boys. I've never gotten attention from my boys. I'm like, they're in the minor leagues.
I've never been a giant breast guy.
I like how we're deflecting. Yes. But yeah, let's go back to my boobs. No. My parents are funny because my mother is a high-powered attorney. And, you know, you get B+. It's like try harder. Mm. Do better. Mm. And my father is... kind of a wild maniac who he's sort of a Steve Jobs type in that he's a total rule breaker and will – I don't know how to – he's a
– Is he entrepreneurial?
He's a maverick.
Is he
yes.
an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
What kind of law does your mother practice?
She does – it's really cool. First Amendment
stuff.
Oh, cool. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I did corporate.
In media.
Oh,
well, it's corporate First Amendment.
Oh, they nice.
But no, I mean, so she'll do like the Chicago Tribune and stuff like that.
Wow. So you think a little bit – I do that with my son. Like you got a B+, why not an A? And I have to be careful. My wife has to like talk me down.
I know. Because it is a lot of pressure. I don't know if it's my parents.
Wait till you start living through your kids, man.
I know. Well, I already am.
At sports and stuff like – she's
get
not –
get her an agent. Yeah. Come on. She'll be the star I never
why
was.
Isn't she eating glue like the other kids? What's wrong with her? Do you have any of this stuff where you're like so hard on yourself, Bianca?
I'm hard on myself, but I'm hard on myself for different – like Ellie and I are very much the yin and yang of each other, whereas I am much more kind of in the moment, fly by the seat of my pants, whatever happens, happens. But I get – I do have a little after – I don't have – it's funny, like with our podcast, like Ellie's the editor, and I'm just kind of like, oh, whatever, it'll be what it'll be. Like, I don't even listen to them before they
I'm
go
like
on.
I'm like the senior class president, and she's homecoming queen.
Oh, okay.
That's like
all
the right. way to describe yeah. it. You do the manifesting and all that stuff, and I like to, like, hit my head against the wall.
So you are me, you are me, and my wife is Bianca.
Yeah.
Let's get married.
Yeah. yeah. It's like, it's, and I think, is Mike the other way, or is it a good compliment? Are you guys
no,
similar?
We're a very good compliment. I mean, I would say the deal with Mike and I is more like the light in the dark. Like I'm much more kind of the positive, anything is possible. Mm. And he's more like – But he's getting there. But he's very grounded and kind of in the mud, which is practical and good for most things. But he's also an artist, so it's weird. It's kind of a
– And he's in recovery. How hard is it to be – I've never talked to anybody about being married. I've got a couple of friends in recovery, but is it – how hard – what's it like to be married to somebody in recovery and some days just like want to slap them and walk?
Yeah. Well, on the very superficial side of like drinking, it was so weird dating him because for the first couple of dates, I was like, I'm so fucking nervous. And why? And I realized because any other person I'd ever dated, I was drunk.
Oh,
like I mean, not like maybe not like you know slobbering all over the place, but I at least was like tipsy at. On our dates.
You're my kind of girl. Great lips and an alcoholic.
Yes. Oh my God. If when she stands up from that chair, you're even going to be more in love with her.
By the way,
she's got a famous ass. Like there are websites about her ass.
By the way, what? This is a giant, this is literally a gallon bottle of water. It's 88, it's alkaline 88. What are you doing that you're drinking this much water? Are you going on a trek?
Yeah, I am, actually.
Pee in a cup for a drug test.
Yeah, that's a whole nother story.
All right, okay.
She's trying to be healthy. She's trying to out-health me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I know. I'm always with a new doctor who's trying new things. That's what I like.
So he's in recovery when you start dating, so you can't be drinking around him. So yeah, you're nervous.
I could drink. He didn't care, but I was like, what's the point? Like, for me, I was like, I don't want to be – I was worried I would go too far in the other direction and then he wouldn't want to go out with me again.
Yeah.
So there was that. But now it's no big deal. He doesn't care. He'll get me drinks. He loves when I have a glass of wine with dinner or and to be honest, like it's been great because I don't drink as much anymore because he's so fun and silly just as a normal person. So it's kind of brought out that part of me. On a deeper level, it's a pain in the fucking ass because addicts are he's a catastrophist. Like everything that happens, it's the worst drama ever in the world. And you have to like have these conversations that kind of meander all over the place and don't really make sense because he's working through the stuff in his brain. And
meaning like he thinks it's going to lead to a series of other bad things. Cause I do that a little bit too, but like, you know, like this didn't happen. And so now that's not going to happen. And it's sort of a ripple effect in his mind.
It's more like, people who are addicts believe that they are not worthy of better life. So so they're constantly finding ways in which they can suffer because the alcohol or the drugs brought them suffering and they believed that they deserved that. So when that's removed, there's still that feeling of shame and self-loathing.
So it's a lot – it's a conversation of like, see, I told you. See what I mean? This is like that.
That. Or when stuff's bad, it's like – could be like a paper cut and it's like you're gaping open, bleeding all over the place.
I know how that feels. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ellie. Well, I don't mean I should get an addiction, guys. What should be my
You're doing
poison?
It backwards. You can't even be an addict the right way. What is wrong with you?
So, okay, what made you become a lawyer? Obviously, whatever your issues are that made you a good lawyer, like picking out what the problems are and figuring out how to deal with it. Like, yeah, mapping out all the possible ways things could go wrong. Mm. You must have done that from a young age.
I think so. I mean, I was kind of a fuck off in high school. I was like I was kind of loosey-goosey about studying. I was pretty fun with my friends and all that stuff, like all kids. And then, I don't know, a switch went off in college. I'm like, all right, I better kick it into gear because, you know, my father put floors in for a living and his knees were the size of basketballs. And it's like, you know, you don't want to do that. He didn't want me to – I wanted to be a carpenter. He's like, you're not going to work with your hands. And I just got anal about studying and stuff like that. And then I didn't plan on being a comedian. I was on Wall Street doing merger deals and then sold some jokes, gave some jokes. I wrote jokes as a hobby, and I went to a private function, and Jay Leno was performing, and I gave him my jokes. I said, you can have these. I don't know what to do with them. And I left, and he called me 2 days later and hired me to start sending jokes in for the Tonight Show monologue.
No way.
And then a week later, he did one of my jokes, and I got my girlfriend, we're living together now, my wife, Carol, and we went to a friend's house up the street and got a bottle of champagne, and he did my joke on the Tonight Show. He paid me $15 for the joke. And blew my head off my shoulders. And then that's how it started. So,
did you have comic friends that had been busting their ass every day and like slitting their wrists when they heard the story? Do you know what I mean? Like, because you were writing these jokes for yourself, you just.
No, because if you hear the whole story, and I don't want to bore my listeners with it, and I could tell you another time, but this was not an easy path for me.
Okay.
I completely I completely gave up my life. I sold my two-bedroom apartment. I sold everything I owned except my car. I moved to a rooming house in Queens and lived with two ex-cons, two recovering addicts, and a 300-pound phone sex operator who sold Herbalife diet products door-to-door. And we shared a kitchen and a bathroom together, and we had a 10-by-12 each had a 10-by-12 room, and I went back to living like a student and threw it all away and had to build myself from the ground up again. I don't come from money. My parents are high school educated, middle-class Italian kid from Rhode Island. So no comic, when they hear my story, can go, oh, you took the easy way, because I didn't. No, I was like super, super high. But I didn't plan on it. It just fell into my lap.
So the Jay Leno thing happened, and then you gave everything.
I started to live a secret double life where I was a Wall Street lawyer, investment banker by day, and at night I was a comic sneaking around the dive bars in New York City.
This is amazing.
Yeah, and so I lived that for 2 years because I was too much of a pussy to pull the trigger hard, and was all of these doubts. So I think I get in my own head, and it still happens, which you have to be. Your mom is probably a brilliant lawyer because she's so fucking analytical, but it can be a colossal pain in the ass if you're a human being living in the world. But it's also beneficial. And then I start to do maybe a little bit what Mike does, which is like I start to say, oh, this happened, and then, oh, but I don't want to make this about me too much. So, but it's I relate to this stuff very, very well, you know? Did you always both know that acting was the calling for you, or was there something else? And then was law maybe for you, Ellie, or Bianca, something else?
My parents wished it was law for me. Bianca, you go first.
I'll give you the shortened version of mine because it can get pretty deep and spread out. But
no,
essentially,
we like deep and spread out.
Well,
I didn't mean it that way. Sorry.
Yes, you did.
No, I actually did.
I always loved performing. I danced as a kid.
Ballet, right?
Yeah, yeah, I hated the discipline of ballet, but I loved being on stage. Mm. So I continued to do it. Then when I went to college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. My mom was like, you'd be great at communications, so you should go to this school. It has a great communications department. And I was like, okay. I went. I was miserable. I had been very contained in my teenage years. My mom was really strict. I couldn't date till I was 16. So I went to college and I just blew up. Like, yeah. I went crazy drinking, partying. And I was so unhappy because I was so lost. And I think deep down I knew exactly what I wanted to do, that I ended up having a couple really bad experiences with ecstasy and having these trips that kind of opened my brain to a whole new way of thinking, where I was like, oh, wow, your mind can actually turn against you.
You don't seem like an ecstasy chick.
I was just doing whatever everyone was doing. I was like along with the flow. But I had a mental breakdown, and I ended up cutting myself and flipping out. My parents had to come get me from college, take me home. Like, my roommates called. I mean, that's when you know it's bad, when your college roommates are like, she needs to go get help.
Wow.
And I went home and I went straight into therapy 5 days a week. And that was where my therapist was like, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, I've always wanted to be an actress, but people don't – that's not real. Like, people don't
do exactly.
That
was the thing that was for me. Like, you know, nobody in my family went anywhere near the – performing arts, you know. So what was it that drove you to cut yourself? Was it like you just
I was having really bad anxiety attacks by that point, and I was just like getting absolutely shit-faced every single night. And I think the noise in my head was so loud that the cutting like brought it to a single specific point that I could focus on. So it's like when you feel pain, everything just goes right there. So it wasn't like I was cutting myself to commit suicide. It just felt so good.
Can I ask you something? Because I hear about cutting and I never talk to anybody. And I get really nerdy. I'm sorry.
No.
So the blade's like on your wrist or wherever it is, right? So what is like when it's touching the wrist and you're just about to do it?
Yeah.
Is your heart racing, your mouth dry? Are you thinking this is a good thing, this is a bad thing? What's going
on?
No. What is, like,
honestly, the way that I can compare it to is like right before you orgasm.
Wow.
Because it's so, there, you know, there's so much pent up and you just want it out.
Yeah.
Like, you just want to let it out. And it's, I mean, obviously there's, when you do it, it's not like orgasming.
Yeah.
But it's that feeling of like that coming to that place where you've got to just release.
And do you feel the release afterwards? Are you like, fuck, now I have to clean up the blood?
No, there is a release. But then it's crazy because that then builds up onto something else, because then there's the after, like, oh shit, I did this. And then that kind of only just adds to the crap that came before.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was a weirdo, like, so stupid, but like I didn't use – I think a couple times I actually used like a knife, but when I did the worst damage was like a lady's like razor with the handle where I just would twist it in.
Oh my God. That's like,
you have scars?
Yeah, that's,
yeah. I have scars on my.
Oh yeah. My, oh yeah. Look at that. Why'd you use a, why not just.
I think it was just at the time what was available.
Well, it's like Artie Lang tried to kill himself with a, stabbing himself with a butter knife. Like it's like, he really did nine times. He stabbed me. Like, really? Did he? I'm sorry. I know we're laughing at it, but.
So dark.
But, oh, I know.
I know, but if you don't laugh at the darkness, like.
You can't even cut yourself the right way.
And my therapist is like, I'm deflecting. I'm just making jokes. And she's like, it's okay, Ellie. This is good. Laugh. This is good. She's
like, you know what? My family has always approach things like from I remember when my brother was in this horrible accident in Prague and he lost both his legs. He was hit by the subway and my whole family flew to Prague and we were there and we were all hanging around and my aunt was there and she was crying and she was like, I bought him a hat and gloves. And my mom was like, well, at least you didn't buy him shoes. it's the only way to get through that shit,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly. So are you, Ellie, are you better now with like
better now.
Beating yourself up about
yes.
stuff? Yeah.
My friends have definitely said that in the past few years that like I'm so much more grounded than I was.
Yeah.
Which is funny. It's a daily thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I feel like a recovering addict and that like every day.
So what do you do on the 7 days of meditation? Because I couldn't keep my mouth shut for 7 days.
I was
and how do you
so,
clear your mind? I can never
oh my
do
God.
That.
I was really excited before I went. Like when I booked my flight to San Francisco, I was excited. And then like 2 days before I freaked out and I was like, all the thoughts in my head are going to kill me. Like the tribunal of assholes are going to murder me and I'm going to be taken away.
I need a lady's razor to cut myself.
Yeah. And the only thing that made me feel a little safer was that this place called Spirit Rock is in Marin County. And so I knew I was like 45 minutes away from San Francisco. So I could just like go to a hotel if I had to or something. It wasn't India, okay? Yeah, right. It wasn't that risky.
Take a cab and go out bar hopping for a night in San Francisco.
I'm sure there are nice boutiques.
Well, maybe you can go bar hopping, but you can't speak during the bar hopping, right?
Well, which would probably help my luck. Yeah. I mean, if I were single.
You know what? The boys are great, but you open your mouth and you ruined it.
I've heard that.
No, seriously?
Well, I have a beautiful voice for podcasting. It's so funny. So it's crazy, though, because I had a roommate and you couldn't talk to your roommate. And that was weird.
So how do you communicate? Like, what do you?
You're not supposed to even make eye contact.
Why?
Because you're supposed to be in your own thing. You're not supposed to be influencing other people or affecting other people. I kept saying I'm sorry all the time because I'd like bump into people and like open the door. You know, people are like, you know, with the door opening.
So
I was an idiot. I was terrible.
Your husband should write this because the scene is like,
apparently.
You bump into, I'm sorry, you're not supposed to talk.
And then I'm mad at myself for saying I'm sorry. And then I spend the next 3 hours because we're doing, you're not allowed to read anything.
Really?
So there's no, you're not supposed to write. So there's no stimuli.
Yeah.
It's just the tribunal of assholes in your head. And you just keep like labeling your thoughts like, okay, you're the dick that keeps telling me, you know, whatever. Or I was constantly thinking about the future. So it's great because you realize like what are your greatest hits, what keeps playing in your mind. And for me, it was like coming up with new ideas for writing or it was mostly the future, not the past for me.
Mm-hmm.
But some people had like breakdowns.
Really?
A couple people left early.
Really?
Because it's 7 days. I am really glad I did that amount of time though. If I did a weekend, forget it. It'd be horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But because I did 7 days,
you
I was able to
through.
Like get into it and push through.
So when you got to the other side, you say you were able to quiet the tribunal and you focused on how did you come? How did you get to the point of peace with yourself?
Hmm.
Have you?
I think
at least right after
for me, yeah. The peace would be realizing that like I have a choice in every moment. I don't have to have Fox News on or any news on. I don't even have to have the radio on. If a song is affecting me, I can turn it off. I don't need to be drinking coffee like I am right now if I didn't want to be extra jazzed.
Yeah.
That I realized after 7 days that I was enough. Like I was able to sit at a table and not have people ask me what I do for a living, where I would feel the insecurity of like, oh, you might have seen me in this thing 5 yeah. years ago, or yeah. to not have to have the story behind me, to just be able to stand there and breathe and just be.
Well, it's
without
funny you should mention that because it is. It's the only business. None of my very close friends, most of whom are from high school, are in this business. And the conversation you get, and the well-meaning is, they go, so what new project are you working on? What show are you going to be on? And you don't do that in any other pressure. You don't go to an account and go, so you got any new accounts? What FASB rule are you learning today, right? You don't do that with any other profession. And I understand, because they're living through us in some way, and they want to see you on TV. They want to see you in movies. And that's the thing that you struggle with, because you find yourself in social situations talking about your resume. And I don't want to talk about my resume, because that's the thing that drives me crazy. Because, you know, you always feel like you want more and you should be farther along. And then you start having – and then you're like, well –
it's never enough. So, and then when you do have something, it's still not enough.
So now I just say I shot an action movie with Charlize Theron and I fucked her hard. And they go – yeah, when's it coming out? And I just pick a date. And then they forget about it, because people are so self-absorbed.
So
they don't give.
No, that's the truth, too.
No,
forever,
they totally
you
forget.
Know, first 5 years in L.A., I was just so stressed out about going home for, like, holiday parties, anything where my family's friends are, you know, what are you doing and what's going on? And, oh, Adam's stuff's going well. You know, just all of that. Mm. Oh, you'll be his Leslie Mann. You're like, great, awesome. Ready for it. When? Or, you know what? He should write you something. Really? Hadn't thought of that before.
Right. Or like, you should have your own show. You know what? I'm going to call Les Moonves and just order that right up right
now.
Yeah.
So that's why the retreat was so great. To be cut off from everyone for 7 days.
But then how do you keep it and have it stick with you once you leave? That would be the
challenge.
Because
it's and it is a challenge, and it's every day.
Yeah.
With what you do. I mean, we talk about this on the podcast all the time, because Bianca does a lot of meditation.
Oh, you do? And, I want to start meditating.
Yeah. I can teach you a really simple, easy way to do it. That's how I started. And actually, I always would go the deepest with that form of meditation.
What does it do for you?
Everything. I mean, the funny thing we've been talking about is I meditated straight for like the last decade, and went on tons of retreats and weird things with other people there.
Wait a minute.
On one of the on one of the Atomic Bomb podcasts, Bianca shared that she went to Ojai and did like a relationship retreat.
This is actually a very funny story, because this goes back to Tom Hertz.
Okay.
So there's this guy, David Data. He's like the sexual guru. And he teaches Tantra, essentially, which Tantra, everybody relates to like sex, which it is, because sex is the basis of kind of where all our energy comes from. But it's also about becoming you as a person. I mean, and it's about feminine and masculine and all that. So I was really interested in studying with this guy who's like, oh, the guy. And I found out he was having a retreat in Ojai, and we were shooting Rules of Engagement at the time.
Good looking guy?
I don't find him attractive, but there are, I'm sure, are women in these things that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, can you imagine if I told my mother that I was going to do this? I can't even go to a mindfulness meditation retreat. You're going to a sexual tantra?
My daughter's going to be a prostitute.
So the best thing is I wrote an email to Tom Hertz saying, because I needed to get that Friday off to go up for the weekend. But I'm like, there's no way I'm telling him what this is.
Especially Tom.
So I write him this email and I say, there's this author I've been dealing with. I've been dealing with a lot of depression after my father passed away, because he had just passed that September, and this was in November. I said, and this is an author that writes about, you know, dealing with loss and all that. I'd like to go see him, you know. They're like, okay, great. So I had said that these are the dates, and it's in Ojai. Tom Hertz goes online, plugs in the dates and Ojai, and I walk into work one morning in my dressing room, and he comes in, and you know, he's doing the Tom Hertz shuffle where he's like kind of like walking around the room. He goes, so, David Data.
That's exactly the way he talks.
I just looked at him, and I feel like my face is going red right now remembering it.
It is a little bit.
It was like the fear that crept over me. Because so from that point forward, I was going to squirt camp.
Nice.
Oh my God. Use the dead dad card to go to squirt camp.
You're going to a bad place. I knew there was a good reason my father dropped dead. I'm going to use that to go to squirt camp. Maybe you need to go to squirt camp.
Yeah,
you can only squirt, you can't talk.
You know, I went to a women's college, and there was a documentary they showed.
Which college?
Smith College.
Oh, yeah.
they showed a squirting video, like one of the groups.
What? Really?
Yeah. Of women squirting.
And what was the purpose of showing that?
I guess it was a – I don't know what club showed it, but it was – I went. It was gross. It was like from the 80s. This woman was in overalls. I don't know.
I wish we knew each other in our early
college. Well, in college, my freshman roommate was also – she slit her wrist in our bed – in our dorm room.
Look at that. Wow. See?
It all comes
I've never seen people bond over cutting. This is the most – this is a breakthrough, man. Squirting and cutting. So what was your first sexual relationship like? Were you like crazy? Were you like each like in college?
Well, I waited. I was 17 or 18. It was my like high school boyfriend. So I waited quite a while. I mean, by nowadays standards.
Yeah. What was yours?
I was 18. It was with my wife. Yeah.
Okay, did you guys ever take a break in any period?
We took a very, very small break.
I hope she got it on with a lot of people.
Did you?
There was a lot of Jerry Curl in her apartment. It was black guys.
Really?
Fucking black. No, I don't know. My wife is a waspy blonde. She kind of looks like Ellie.
Nice.
And
I'm surprised she doesn't have my weird tics that you're.
No, man. And her parents are divorced. She's like completely.
Yeah, mine are divorced since it was four.
Together. Like, she's completely like. Whooshed. And, you know, it wasn't a horrible, ugly divorce, but it wasn't good. She was like middle school when it happened. So, you know, that can affect you, but like.
I was four, so I don't really remember.
The first date was I took her to a movie, and then I tried to hold her hand afterwards, and she wouldn't hold my hand. And I'm like, fuck that. I'm not going to take her to get anything to eat. But I did. I really thought for a minute, like, I was going to take her to get a pastrami sandwich. At a place called Duck Soup on Mineral Spring Avenue in North Providence, Rhode Island. And I'm like, all right, I'll take it. Nothing. And then we finally made out in my mother's Oldsmobile in the front seat. I got under the bra.
Nice.
And then one thing led to another. Oh, sex while I'm driving back from skiing. And I mean sex.
Skiing.
Yeah, I'm driving and there's business going on down
during
there.
The drive.
Oh, yeah.
The most, makes me nervous.
I don't even know why I'm saying
that. Didn't you think about all the things that could go wrong?
No. The only one thing that could go right was me having an orgasm. I was trying to cut myself, but I was driving.
Yeah. It was also winter, the ice. That was dangerous.
I know. It was completely irresponsible. Like, so irresponsible. Seatbelt off and
very
everything
sexy.
Else.
But, I love this. I also love that.
She was a prom queen.
Oh, my God. And my husband was prom king.
And do you want to know why my wife was prom queen?
No, homecoming king.
Because she was super, super nice. Like, she was like this. I think she got. She's also beautiful and was really cute and attractive, but like. She was a nice soul. Like, she was like one of the girls that like was nice to everybody, and like was. And I think that it kind of restored my faith in mankind a little bit. Like, people recognize that. Not to brag about my wife.
There's nothing hotter than a man bragging about his wife.
I'm going to tell her to listen to this podcast so I can have sex with her later. just kind of that. But when your husband's working on stuff, Adam, Ellie, like, do you like? Are you reading his stuff? Are you giving him suggestions, or are you just looking at it for your own self interest?
Both. I think when he's asleep, I'm trying to reprogram him. I'll like whisper in his ear. That's right. Actually, he was really sweet. I just did a little thing. He was doing rewrites on Alvin and the Chipmunks 4, and he does like mostly badass movies. Like he did Due Date with Zach Galifianakis and Robert Downey Jr. And he's a lot of like blow up kind of like manly man things. And then he did Alvin and the Chipmunks 4, which is so cute. And so I just did a fun scene from that. And I'm sure
he did Maid of Honor.
Well, that – so the weird thing with Maid of Honor is
– don't contradict me. He did Maid of Honor? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well,
no, go ahead.
It was a totally different movie when he wrote it. It took place totally in New York. They did the Scotland – you know, with writing, it's bizarre because it's like there's 12 writers. He was the first one and he was able to get credit and we're grateful for that. That movie was funny because I did the – I'm in the opening scene and I had asked my agents like if there's a coffee girl like – at Starbucks, anything, I'd love to read for it. And Adam had nothing to do with the movie at the time. I get to audition for Monica Lewinsky because it's a Halloween party. I look nothing like Monica Lewinsky. I'm like, great. I'm definitely going to get it.
Did you put jizz on your face?
No, I should have.
Yeah.
But I was supposed to be sloppy drunk, and I can do that. So I burped on command, and that's why I got that part. Because I, like, slur a bunch of lines, and then
you
I go.
You actually have that on your resume, I think. Oh my God.
And the casting director's like, I'm sorry, could you do that again? Like, and I'm like, yeah.
Can I just say I am totally turned on right now?
So that's how I got the part. All these years and years of acting training, you know, like, how much money did I spend?
Were you a tomboy growing up? Brothers, sisters?
Honestly, I have nothing. I'm an only child with six kind of siblings.
Whoa.
This is why I have anxiety.
How about you? Were you
oldest of two.
Oh, you have the mother.
Three, sorry.
Motherly yeah. thing about
She's
you,
She's
right?
so motherly.
This is the thing. When I was single and all the guys were always like, you're so nurturing. I don't need nurturing. It's boring, but it's good now.
Were you close to getting married to somebody else ever?
I was married to someone else.
Go on.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Wow. I was married to a soccer player, a United States soccer player.
Oh, well, right. You were married to Landon Donovan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I read that. I forgot about that. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty big someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys ever play soccer together?
Yeah. I played in a charity game once.
Was it weird playing soccer with your pro husband?
No, because I'm not like that.
Yeah. He must have a nice ass because he runs around a lot.
He did have a really nice ass.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know why I thought of that, but...
They have really nice bodies, soccer players. Yeah. Very aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
Mike has a great body, though.
No, he does. Yeah. So does Adam, which is ridiculous for a screenwriter. Like, he should not
be.
He
works out a lot.
Every day.
He's such a beautiful person to be a writer. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They did an app contest on the Undateable, like, writing staff, and he won.
Any funny stories on the set of Undateable for you guys? Any moments, anything off camera that would be story worthy?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's always so hard to think about it because I feel like once you walk away from set, you kind of shut off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're a good crew, though.
Yeah, that's
they're
great.
Really good.
And tell people Twitter where they can find you guys. And the Atomic Mom podcast is on the SideshowNetwork.tv.
Yeah.
And that's every week.
And you can go to iTunes.com/AtomicMoms.
Okay. And where Twitter handles and all that?
I'm at Miss Kylik.
Spell your last name for people.
Yes.
Yeah. Miss MissKajlich.
And I'm at Ellie in LA. ELLIEINLA.
And we're changing that to at the boys.
At the boys.
So good.
This has been a lot of fun. I hope you guys had a good time.
Oh, God,
so
the best
much
time.
Fun. I want to meet your wife now.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
Are you guys in New York?
What's her name?
Her name is Carol Potter.
Carol.
What's her Twitter handle?
She goes nowhere near it. She doesn't do Twitter. She doesn't do Facebook.
Oh, that's nice.
She just...
Does she listen to your podcast, though?
Yes. She works in my business. Her background is museums, and she was a curator and an archivist with historic costumes and clothing and textiles. And then we had our kid, and I'm like, bitch, you're staying home. No. And then I made her make me dinner. No. There is a little bit of an Italian in me with that, like, kind of whatever. And I don't, like, load the dishwasher. I will not do that.
You won't.
Under any circumstances.
Neither will I, so.
Yeah, thank you. See, we could, with the lips and the thing and the.
I know.
Yeah. Really. And you said she has a nice ass? Is that what you said?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I wouldn't check you out because you're married to
thank
Mike
you.
And whatever. That would be
there
weird.
Are websites.
There are websites with your ass on it?
There's a website.
Okay, fine. A website.
What website? I
don't know.
Right
we should put up our own so we could.
You know what you should do? You should take that giant bottle of water and show your ass through the water and have somebody take a picture of mother.
Wow, that got a little too artistic.
That was a little crazy, right? But yeah, so she works like with me and stuff and helps me with everything. Mm-hmm. And we work together and she listens to them sometimes, certain ones. And she'll give me feedback on my act and stuff like that.
And do you take her feedback well?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of times, or if I'm writing an email and I'm really pissed off, I make her read it first.
Oh, that's good.
Because then I'll start
Adam will do that for me, too, because he's my calming.
Yeah, or I'm not saying this the right way. I spend, a fair amount of time, not being pissed off, but, maybe it's the anal planning thing again.
Yes, exactly. Right. I'm the same way. And I was listening to your podcast with Stephen Colbert, and I was like, oh, my God, Colbert is Adam. There's this, calm – he's just, such a decent guy.
Yeah, he's like a Sunday. He's taught Sunday school. He's very religious. His parents, his brother, and his father died in a plane accident when he was a teenager, and it really, obviously affected him. And it's one of the reasons he attributes the fact that he got immersed himself in the Lord of the Rings stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. It's a way to kind of it saved him in a way. He said as a kid, and he can cite the Bible.
I know, so smart.
And Lord of the Rings, like, it's the weirdest thing.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I love it. But he did remind me a lot of Adam, because it just, there's like a sense of like decency and like a wholesomeness that came across in that podcast. I was like, yes, that's what
good.
My husband.
Well, that worked. I'm glad, because in a business where there's, you know, that's a sometimes a shortage of that. Like and it hasn't changed. Like he and I know each other from working together at The Daily Show when he was a correspondent there and not the name he is now. And he's still the same guy. And like I could call him up and get, hey, I need, you
that's
know.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I need a box of ladies' razors to cut myself and be like, boom. And I need a squirt can.
That's amazing. I love it. I think I'll never forget, too, the thing about the Steve Carell, like that he kept pitching Steve Carell and they kept being like, no, find me another guy. Find me another guy.
Yeah.
Like, I will remember that every day in
this
town.
Yeah, and one of the other things about Steve Carell was that when he was on the show, he was a correspondent. He was doing fine, but it takes a while to find your voice in that role as correspondent. You got to kind of find your niche, right? And I remember overhearing, like, one of the executive producers going, yeah, what's the piece tonight, meaning the field piece? And he's like, Steve Carell, oh, okay, all right. How's it looking? And it's good. And he goes, all right, well, we'll give it one more shot and, you know, we'll see. And it was like his fifth one. And then it's so like, you know, it wasn't like automatic. It wasn't automatic for any of these guys. And then it just sort of, you know, kind of you. But that's the thing is if you have the luxury of like time to have it to play itself out. Right. That's why network television, sometimes they order six episodes and then boom, you're gone. You know, it's like, so, yeah, it was pretty inspirational stuff. But, yeah, he had to really like. Steve Carell. I'm like, nah, we don't, nah, 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 nah.
I love that.
Nah. And then there you go.
That's like, that gets me so excited, just hearing stories like that, what you're talking about. Like, just give up everything, live in a shithole with a bunch of people. Like,
yeah, it was not.
Just, but then you get it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I love hearing about the struggle.
I do think you have to give up a lot to get a lot.
Yeah.
And that may go back to this stuff that Ellie and I do of, like, you know, beating up ourselves or this or that. But I think, like, I mean, I think we live in a culture where it's sort of like, yeah, I just want it right away. You know, Twitter, I want to be a huge star. I'll go on Twitter and boom or whatever. And it's like, I think you got to – there's honor in sort of earning it along the way. You know what I mean? I mean, that's yes. – anyway. So anyway, you guys are great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this. And Atomic Moms, when does that post?
Every Wednesday.
Okay. SideshowNetwork.tv and iTunes.com/AtomicMoms. And you have a documentary you wanted to mention that you're working on?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to film a documentary in June.
On me?
Yeah, you want it? You want it?
Lips. It's going to be called Lips.
Back you guys lips do. And... I'm going to go get collagen.
No, you're fine.
No, I've got this waspy upper lip. I'm feeling so unfair.
No, you know why? It would be out of balance with the boys. You got to. It's all. Yeah.
Well,
when
I get the implants, then I'll get the lips.
I'm sorry. What's the documentary?
The documentary. This is you guys. Everyone who's listening, go to this website to watch the trailer for this shit. Yeah. It will blow
your
fucking mind.
It's a teaser trailer right now, so it's very short. But it's Joyrider is the name of the documentary, and it's joyriderdoc.com, and it's about my brother who's an amputee, and he's taking on the race across America, which is 3,000 miles in 10 days from Oceanside, California to Annapolis, Maryland, and he is trying to be the first solo hand cyclist to complete it. And along the way, we're telling his story about his amputations and kind of how he came to become a world-class triathlete.
Wow. He's a triathlete?
Yeah. Paratriathlete.
It's mind-blowing. So next time you're like, I don't want to work out. I feel like a lazy piece of shit. Watch this trailer.
Just look down and go, you have legs. Now go work out. Right. Yeah.
Good well, for you. And the good thing about him is he, you know, the story basically goes that he is responsible for this accident happening. He made choices in his life that kind of led up to this. And so it's kind of I feel like everyone can relate to that of getting down on yourself and feeling like you're in your own way. And he just really is showing how to say fuck off. And
that's great. Yeah. Good for you. Good for him. And Ellie, what do you got going on? Anything you want to plug and talk about?
Just raising my baby.
All right, good.
Atomic Moms. And I'm working on a book about anxiety. So. No. Which nothing will give you more anxiety than writing a book. Fucking book about anxiety.
But what's the title?
I mean, it's been
so
going
great.
For weeks. I know. I don't want to share. The title's so good. I'm afraid someone else
it's
will take it.
It's called Squirt Camp.
It's called Calm the Fuck Down.
Good.
Hey.
You got to talk to – you got to listen to Lauren Zander's interview and go – and I can introduce you to her. She would be good for you. You guys are fantastic. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening, everybody. All right. That was Ellie Noss and Bianca Kailik. How fun are they? How crazy are they? It was such a cool interview. Can't thank them enough for doing the show. And I'm never going to have the image of Squirt Camp out of my head ever. You guys are the best for listening.
keep spreading the word about the podcast. Send the links around. Tell your friends to subscribe. It's on iTunes. Keep building the Paul Mercurio Nation. You guys are the best. Check out my website, paulmercurio.com. Pick up a CD. You guys, see you next week.